Welcome to the Deep Dive. We're your shortcut to understanding really complex research. And today, wow, we are diving deep into some advanced mathematics. We're looking at a pretty significant 2004 paper by Sandra Sarai and Michael Ruckner. It's all about large deviation estimates, specifically in the context of stochastic reaction diffusion systems. You probably know them as SPDEs. Okay, so our mission today really is to unpack why this paper is seen as such a landmark. It's about this huge mathematical generalization they achieved, and the point of that was to finally let us use these powerful probabilistic tools, the ones that quantify the odds of really, really rare events, on the kind of messy, complex, nonlinear systems we actually see in the real world.
Yeah, that's a great summary. So maybe let's just set the stage first. We're talking about stochastic reaction diffusion equations, SPDEs. Fundamentally, these equations model systems where two things are happening at once. You've got diffusion things spreading out like heat or chemicals, and you've also got the components interacting often in complicated nonlinear ways. That's the Pfeiffer term they talk about. And the stochastic part is absolutely key here. It just means the whole system is being pushed around by some kind of randomness, some noise. That's the WJ-JAR term. You know, this could be anything from background temperature fluctuations, maybe measurement errors, or just the inherent unpredictability you find in nature.
Right. And the specific angle here, large deviations. That's one of the most fascinating areas in probability, I think. We're not looking at the average behavior, the most likely thing to happen. No, we're trying to calculate the tiny, often vanishingly small probability that the system's actual path, they call it subsilon strays, really far from what you'd predict without noise. That predicted path is the skeleton equation, six fight. And this whole idea really comes into play when the noise, that epsilon seri, is very small. So we're literally calculating the odds of some extreme outlier event. And this paper, it builds directly on, you know, the classic work by Friedland back in the 80s, but it just pushes the boundaries much further.
Exactly. Friedland's work was foundational, absolutely revolutionary. But let's say it came with some pretty heavy mathematical handcuffs. The assumptions you needed to make were just so strict you couldn't easily apply the theory to a lot of practical real-world problems. And that's where Sarai and Ruckner come in. Their central achievement was proving these same crucial estimates, the large deviations principle, the LDP, but under much weaker assumptions. And relaxing those assumptions, well, that's what really opens the door to handling genuine, complex nonlinearities found in nature.
Okay, let's unpack those handcuffs they managed to break, because this is where it gets super interesting for anyone trying to model complex systems. The first big one you mentioned concerns the reaction term, the 5-3. Traditionally, older large deviation work often needed the coefficients to be globally Lipschitz. So, globally Lipschitz. Does that basically mean the system's growth rate is kind of, well, tame and predictable everywhere? And why did that exclude so many real systems?
That's a perfect way to think about it, yeah. Globally, Lipschitz means the rate of change is bounded, mathematically well-behaved, everywhere. It never explodes unexpectedly. It's really an idealized picture. In reality, interactions often aren't nice straight lines. They can spike, sometimes dramatically. Think about chemical reactions where the rate suddenly accelerates, or population dynamics with thresholds, or heat flow problems. Requiring global Lipschitz continuity meant researchers often had to artificially flatten those spikes in their models. They had to use approximations that might actually miss the crucial behavior.
But Sarai and Ruckner said, no, we can handle the spikes.
They absolutely did. They managed to prove their results assuming the reaction terms are only locally Lipschitz. So, okay, it's well-behaved within bounded regions, but not necessarily everywhere. And crucially, they allowed these terms to have polynomial growth. That's hypothesis 4 in their paper.
That sounds technical, maybe, but the implication feels huge.
Oh, it is. It really is. This move lets them include highly nonlinear examples, things like high-order polynomials. The paper mentions forms like sigma sigma plus 1 plus some ci sigma don. If you're modeling something with complex feedback or cascading effects, your reaction terms are almost certainly going to look like that, like polynomials. So now researchers don't have to simplify those dynamics artificially anymore. They can use more realistic models.
Okay, so that takes care of the reaction side, the 5-DOL. What about the noise itself, the diffusion coefficients, KOJ-DON?
That's the second major generalization. It's about the noise term, DAJ. Again, earlier work often needed these terms to be globally bounded. The noise couldn't get arbitrarily large. Sarai and Ruckner removed that restriction. They only required the diffusion coefficients to be globally Lipschitz, which is hypothesis 3. But importantly, they don't need to be bounded. And what's really interesting here is that the noise they allow can also be degenerate.
Degenerate noise. Okay, that sounds potentially problematic. What does that mean in practice?
Good question. Think of maybe a physical system, like, I don't know, a satellite. Degenerate noise just means the random jolts don't necessarily affect every aspect of the system equally. Maybe noise affects its sideways motion, but has zero effect on its rotation. The randomness is kind of constrained. It doesn't act in all dimensions or on all components. It's degenerate in certain ways. And this is super important because in many real systems, noise does couple selectively. It only affects certain parts. The paper gives a nice example of the kind of noise they can handle. Lambda UJ. This can be unbounded, and it's multiplicative and potentially degenerate.
Okay, so they've tackled the coefficients, allowing polynomial growth and reactions and unbounded, possibly degenerate noise. But that leads to another headache, right? How do you analyze not just one equation with these tricky coefficients, but a whole system of them coupled together?
Exactly. That's a major part of their work. They consider systems of torr-coupled SPDEs, where tuanners could be anything one or greater. And analyzing coupled systems is just inherently much harder. Why? Because for a single equation, when one Olliery 1, mathematicians have this really useful toolbox, things like comparison principles, the maximum principle.
Which helps you put bounds on the solution, doesn't it? Keep it under control.
Precisely. The maximum principle lets you compare your unknown solution to known functions, basically ensuring it doesn't run wild. But as soon as you couple equations together, when they start influencing each other dynamically, you often lose those comparison tools. They just don't apply anymore. So Sarai and Ruckner had to build a framework that could handle this interdependence without relying on those standard comparison techniques.
Wow. Okay. That sounds like they needed a completely different approach to handle the weaker coefficient assumptions and the coupled systems. They must have had to switch their analytical toolkit entirely.
They did. That's a core technical leap in the paper. Because they relax those Lipschitz assumptions, especially allowing polynomial growth, the established methods just broke down. Many older methods relied on finding solutions using things like mild solutions and contraction theorems. These basically need the system to be contractive, mapping a space back into itself in a shrinking way to guarantee a unique solution. Polynomial growth often destroys that property.
So if the old tools are broken, what do they use instead?
They shifted their whole analytical perspective. Instead of the martingale approach, which was common in probabilistic SPDE work and focuses on the random fluctuations, they adopted the semigroup approach. This approach has more of an infinite dimensional analysis flavor. It thinks about the system's evolution as being governed by an underlying operator, a generator, and its associated semigroup, which describes the deterministic flow.
That sounds like a major pivot, almost like switching fundamental paradigms. And didn't they also run into issues with the mathematical space they were working in?
Yes, absolutely. To handle arbitrary spatial dimensions, Dimension-Dolliver and Oregepthor 1, and especially those polynomial reaction terms, the standard Hilbert space framework, specifically 2L2-RRRI, wasn't quite right.
Okay, for listeners maybe not deep in functional analysis daily, What's the key difference? Why move away from Delta?
It's a great question. Two-law-tool space, Hilbert space, is fantastic for dealing with energy, things based on square integrability, useful for conservation laws and such. But dealing with potentially explosive polynomial growth across multiple spatial dimensions, they needed to control the smoothness and the point-wise behavior of the solutions more directly, not just their overall energy. So their solution was to conduct the analysis in the space of continuous functions, denoted 2-hour. This space focuses on continuity and boundedness, which was essential to make sure the solutions behaved reasonably even with those strong nonlinearities.
But changing the space isn't free, is it? Moving from two to Lollers means you lose some of the nice geometric properties of Hilbert spaces.
Yeah.
Need new tools there too?
They did, yeah. To make everything work rigorously in the space of continuous functions, they had to lean heavily on some quite sophisticated analytical tools called heat kernel estimates. These estimates provide very precise information about the smoothing properties and the spatial decay of the solutions generated by the lineal part of the equation, the semigroup ETA. It helps control how things spread out and smooth over time, which was crucial for managing the nonlinear terms.
So this whole chain, relaxing coefficient rules, handling coupled systems, shifting the analytical method to semigroups, moving to continuous function spaces, using heat kernel estimates, it all builds up to their main results.
Exactly. All those technical maneuvers allowed them to successfully prove the two main types of large deviation estimates. These are theorems 6.2 and 6.3 in the paper. Together, these theorems establish the full large deviations principle, LDP, for these much more general systems. They confirm that the probability of those rare deviations can be precisely quantified.
And that quantification hinges on this key concept, the action functional, Tach-Cheeseller. Let's try to connect that back for the listener. How should we think about the action functional in sort of plain terms.
Okay, the action functional. Think of it as the cost or effort required to force the system along a specific unlikely path. Sevenwelt fear. Remember the skeleton equation? Sexigate. That's the path the system follows if you deliberately drive it with a deterministic input, pedesige, instead of noise. The action functional, basically, is the minimum energy or size, in a 202 sense, of the deterministic input femery that you would need to steer the skeleton equation precisely along that rare path you're interested in. It quantifies the minimum deterministic push needed to make the system exhibit that specific rare behavior.
Ah, okay. So if the action functional for a particular path filler is really high, it means it takes a lot of specific effort to make the system go that way.
Right.
So it's very unlikely to happen just by random chance from the noise.
Precisely. The LDP theorems they proved show that the probability of observing that rare path $0 decays exponentially fast as the noise level epsilon goes to zero. And the rate of that exponential decay is given exactly by this action functional, Audi XTZ. It provides a concrete quantitative measure for the likelihood of extreme events, even in these very complex nonlinear settings.
And the payoff here is huge because this wasn't just theoretical gymnastics. The authors explicitly state they were motivated to get estimates for systems with polynomial reactions in unbounded noise. They knew the kinds of equations people needed to solve in practice.
Absolutely, and they specifically confirm that their framework successfully covers a really important class of physical equations, the stochastic Ginzburg-Landau equations.
That is a big deal, isn't it?
Hmm.
Especially in physics, condensed matter, material science. Why are the stochastic Ginzburg-Landau equations such a key benchmark for this kind of theory?
Well, the SGL equations are fundamental models for describing phenomena like phase transitions, superconductivity, pattern formation situations, where systems are often near critical points and highly sensitive to noise or small changes. Their reaction terms are inherently nonlinear, usually cubic or even higher order, and the noise involved is often multiplicative and can be degenerate. So they perfectly exemplify the kind of complexity Soraya and Ruckner aim to handle. Previous LDP frameworks often struggled with the mathematical difficulties posed by these features. Soraya and Ruckner's work, by allowing polynomial growth and working in the right function space, gives mathematicians the confidence to analyze stability and rare events in these crucial physical models without having to oversimplify them.
Okay, so wrapping up the main achievement here, Soraya and Ruckner essentially took large deviation theory and massively expanded its reach. They created a robust, mathematically rigorous framework, one that lets researchers really study the probability of rare, potentially critical events like a system failure, an unexpected transition in complex, nonlinear, multidimensional systems that are coupled together and driven by realistic noise, all with fewer idealizations than ever before.
Yeah, and thinking about the impact moving forward, because these generalized estimates do apply to key models like stochastic Ginzburg-Landau, this work really provides the foundation, the mathematical confidence needed to analyze the stability and robustness of critical systems. You know, systems where those rare, unlikely events could have really significant, maybe even catastrophic consequences. So the question for researchers now isn't so much if they can analyze these messy systems. It's more like, what specific high-stakes system are we going to analyze next using this more powerful framework? Is it a climate model, a financial system, a biological network? Where can these insights make the biggest difference? That feels like the next frontier.